really kind of as early as you can remember, or really, wherever you want to start. You know, the thing, and it occurred to me that I only know bits and pieces of a lot of these stories, but the one obviously that kind of sticks out to me is, I think you were more or less kidnapped when you were a little kid by your dad and taken away to New York.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a dramatic word, but did he take you without?
No, he came, he asked my mother and Jimmy Lawton if he could take me for a weekend.
Oh.
And they put some clothes together, and he came in a car with a couple other people. I think one was his brother. And so she packed some clothes up for me, and I got in the car and went with them. They went to New York. We were in New Hampshire. We were living.
Yeah.
We were staying in Farmington. It was a little town, and I think they had a little cabin, some places you can go. You can rent a little one room cabin for the night, that kind of thing. Well, it was. Somebody had three or four of those, and we were living in one of those, and there was a brook that went by it, because I remember one night I was four, so it's before that, it's probably when I was three or so. I got out of the crib, and nobody was around, kind of a usual affair there, and I got out of the crib and I went outside the cabin, and it was a stark, bright moonlight night, and the light was glittering on the water, and I went over to the brook and I waded out into the brook, and I slipped on the slimy rocks and fell, and I thought, I don't like this. That was cold. So I came back out of the brook and went back into the house and climbed back in the crib and went to sleep.
In a crib, so that and means
I was probably three.
That's bizarre. So he came and took you for the weekend and brought you this?
He brought me to New York, and I didn't know, because I was four, so I didn't know what...
It wasn't in the city, or is that a different one?
No, this was in the city.
Okay.
It was in the suburbs of the city, but it was in the city, and we moved around, because there were apartments in the city, and he talked somebody into letting us stay in an apartment, promising them rent, but they never did, so two or three days would go by, and they'd throw us back out, and we'd go to some other place. It was fascinating because the beds came out of the wall, but he had a girlfriend, and she had her brother visit once in a while. They had an argument one night, big fight, and I cried, and my father asked me why I was crying, and I said I didn't want them to leave because he was telling them both to leave. So he said, all right, you can stay, he said to them, and they stayed. And then he had his shirt off, so he lit his chest hair with a match. My eyes bugged out of my head, and he just went one swipe and wiped it all out. And it kind of changed my whole perspective on things. And, so,
that's a lie.
But I didn't, you know, I had left my home base, and I was in somewhere else with somebody else. And his girlfriend wanted me to call her mom, and I already had a mom, so I didn't know what to do about that. I just didn't call her mom. And
did you think that was going to be long term or indefinite?
I never thought about it.
Didn't even know. Yeah,
I didn't give it much thought. So I remember a porch, a screen porch, after the apartments was a screen porch. Well, he apparently had a job working for Coca-Cola, painting a Coca-Cola sign on the side of a cobblestone house, a business building or something. Mm-hmm. And so he used to come home with bottles of Coca-Cola. So breakfast was a bottle of Coca-Cola, and evening supper was a bottle of Coca-Cola.
Lovely.
And then I remember one day he had an alarm clock, and he was wiping it off on his chest. He was going to go pawn it, I guess. In retrospect, that's what I think happened, because we didn't have anything. And one day, his girlfriend came, and she told me to come with her. See, normally I was in the apartment, an apartment, by myself, and I didn't have any clothes. I don't know what they did with them, but I was a little naked kid. I remember one night I went out. I went out the window. The window was open. I don't know what floor we were on, but there was a fire escape, and it went all the way to the bottom because I went all the way to the ground. So I went to the fire escape, and I went all the way down. And when I got to the bottom of the fire escape, I started walking in the alley, and I heard all these fire engines, and it was crunching under my feet. It felt like glass, but it wasn't cutting me. Yeah, at least very tough potato chips. I was crunching them out. And then the fire engines seemed to be coming my way, and it scared me. So I went back up the fire escape, back into the apartment, and I had a half a deck of cards that he left me to play with. Well, and that was the case. Well, so his girlfriend showed up and said I should go with her. And I don't know what I wore. She must have figured out something, because we went someplace in a cab. And we went out into the countryside in this cab. And there were kids, and I remember there were funny books. And I think it was her family, mother's house or something, because there were other kids. And they had some kind of goat, and I remember drinking goat's milk. And it was awful. Warm goat's milk was terrible. It stunk. But we, in the evening, we caught fireflies in a jar, and we were trying to sneak the jar under the cover so we could read comic books by the light of the fireflies. I thought that was clever.
This is, you're three?
I'm four.
You're four.
Yeah.
So is that two separate trips, or is that still...
That's the one trip to New York when I was four.
When you were four.
Yeah.
And that, do you have any concept of how long that actually...
That was a month.
It's a month.
Yeah,
to get you for the weekend.
My mother found me.
Kept you for a month.
After a month, she found me.
Oh my God.
She took a bus to New York City, and she found me on a sidewalk, dragging a dead bird on a string. No, that was my buddy.
What? Now I remember hearing that story too. So, he comes wants to take you for a weekend. He takes you far away for a month. She finally figures out where you are.
Yeah, I don't know how she found me.
And you're back in you're not at the country home anymore, you're back out in the city?
Well, he came, when I was out in the country, we were outside, and the sun was shining bright, and all of a sudden, his girlfriend hollered to me to run, so I started running, and my shadow was overtaken by a bigger shadow, and picked me up off the ground, and it was my father.
That's your real father?
Yeah, my bio father.
Oh, wow. I heard bits and pieces of that story, and I always associate it with the horrible guy.
No. The horrible guy is where I was, that my bio father came and took me out of that to go to New York. So now I was with him and his world. And so he took me back in the same cab, the same driver.
Wow.
That took me there. He must have known the driver, so I don't know how that worked out. They must have both known the same driver. Mm. So he took me back, and then after that it got cloudy. I don't know. I think we went from place to place, but he was never there. And then I was out on the sidewalk, and I was just walking on the sidewalk in New York when I heard her call. I heard my mother call my name. And I remember saying, "Oh, no, you don't." And I think that means that I thought she would take me back to my father, and he would take me somewhere else. You know, I just didn't know where I was going. I was happy the way I was, walking on the street with my bird on a string.
A dead bird on your string.
But that was my buddy. and I said, "Oh, no, you don't." But she caught up with me.
You think she was going to take you back to Louis or take you back to...
Louis.
Okay.
No, either way. Either way was a... No, it was a not win. It was lose-lose.
So whose custody were you in when you're just wandering around on the sidewalk?
Nobody's.
But he's kind of, you're sort of with him, but he's just gone?
No, I don't know where he was. You know, he could have been in jail for all I know. I don't know where he was. And I don't think anybody had. I was wondering.
Where did you live in the apartment?
I don't know. I remember a porch that has some screens that were broken, and but you know, it's a big blank. But you know, most of those early years there was nobody. You know, I remember when we lived in New England and she sent me for some cigarettes, when there was nobody there. when I came back, and it was winter and snowing and it was freezing cold, and I was frozen, and there was nobody home. There was nobody there. So that, there was a lot of that. My early years are full of that. Nobody there, nobody there. Where's everybody? Where's everybody left? So, but then she took me to a 5 and 10 cent store, and she took my sunsuit off, which embarrassed me, and she spit on a handkerchief and tried to wipe my dirt off my face, and because my sunsuit was filthy apparently, and she bought a new sunsuit and put it on me.
What is a sunsuit?
It's like pants with a bib overalls. It's got a bib in the front with straps. Mm-hmm. It was that. So.
Okay.
And then we got on a bus, and we had a bus ride back to New Hampshire, and I was back in the same matrix with Jimmy Lawton.
Jimmy Lawton, yeah.
And that was a scary deal.
I wonder what anyone was thinking, really, but when he comes to get you for the weekend, keeps you for a month, but really kind of brings you to wherever he happens to be staying, but then just leaves and goes and does whatever he's doing.
Mm.
I have to wonder, like, what the heck were they thinking? But
I don't know. He's a very brilliant guy, but very distractible, and it's usually booze that did it. And then he'd be in another world. I think it's sociopathic. In that his rules are reality, and other rules outside himself, are just obstacles. So if he decides he wants something in a store, he'll take it. Or if he wants to take me, then he's got me. And there is no accountability for it.
Mm.
And then if he parks me in place X, then okay. And he can go live his life doing something else, and whenever he remembers that, then it's okay. See, so
wow.
It was like that. I remember he said he was going to teach me to swim, and that was because I had to get a bath, so I was in a bathtub. And he said, okay, you put your head down in the water, and I'll count to three. And so I did that, and he counted to three. I pulled my head back up, and that was swimming, so-called.
Gosh.
And then we shared a Coke, and that was supper. And, you know, it was just, that's pretty much all I remember of those early days, with that time with him.
Mm.
I remember when we left the house in New Hampshire, I complained that I had an infected finger, and they stopped the car and had me pee on it.
Oh my
and
God.
That would heal it. He and his brother both agreed. So, you know, it was a strange.
Oh my God.
Strange life. I remember if I had an earache, my mother would, who smoked, would have me lie on my side, and she'd blow smoke in my ear. It was supposed to heal my ear.
Oh, goodness.
Yeah, it was just...
I remember her putting butter on burns.
Butter on burns.
I think that's more of a widely adopted wives' tale kind of thing, but I remember that. But smoke in your ear.
Yeah, that was supposed to fix my
ear. What would that... logically, I wonder... that possibly do.
I don't know.
They warm your ear for a second, but it would infect it even worse.
Yeah. Smoke in my ear and fill my lungs while you're at it.
Gosh.
It was the early days where, let's see, I remember the earliest, I think, was when I was in that little shack, that little house, and going into the river at night. But earlier than that, I think we were in Farmington, and I could walk. I mean, I was old enough to be able to walk and go out in the yard. But there was a year when there was an earthquake, and they had big stone slab steps to the house.
In New Hampshire.
Yeah, and that in Farmington, New Hampshire. And that, and they, those steps moved dramatically. So that they had to be, somebody was going to have to come in and put them back so that you could use them as steps to the house. So that's how bad the earthquake was then. But
wow.
Prior to that earthquake, there was a farm. We were staying with some people that had a farm. And I went out, I was fascinated with matches, so I found some matches. And I went outside. I knew enough you'd have to get by yourself or you'd get in trouble with them. You know? So I went out down past the pig pen and got down by a field, and the grass was yellow straw. And so I lit a match, and it started to burn my thumb, so I dropped it on the ground, and it lit. Mm-hmm. And it was a stick. It lit the grass, and I took a stick to hit it, and the flames burst into two parts, left and right is burning now. I tried to hit those, and it got worse and worse, and I dropped the stick, and I ran back up toward the house, and the pig, I thought the pig was chasing me. When I went past the pig, I was really scared. I ran as fast as I could, and then I hid under the stairs. And, of course, then I could hear all the sirens going everywhere, and all the local farmers and pickup truck guys that had things to pump water, and they're all trying to stop the burning. And it burnt the whole field. There was a big tree in the middle of the field, and I wondered if it would burn the tree, and I was really concerned about it. And then my mother came out of the house and found me under the stairs, and she said, "Have you been playing with matches?" And I said, "No."
Wow.
Yeah, that was... And of course, they must have known that thing started somehow.
Yeah.
But I stuck with my story because I figured I was going to be in a lot of trouble.
That's hilarious that I had that really... I didn't set anything on fire, but I had that really same thing with Mom.
That's like right.
Lighting the matches and...
That's right.
And you do the matches, no.
And see, the string of continuity in all that is my father was a liar to get his own way. Mm-hmm. And then here I come to protect myself. I've got to lie, and I learned to lie. Because mm-hmm. He would, you know, sometimes he taught me not to say anything. He taught me to dodge questions. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, he was sitting, when I was older, and I was, I don't know, 13, 14, I was home, and he said, "We're sitting at a table." And he's all ticked off, and he throws the food on the wall, and the spaghetti's draining down the wall, and the coffee ground from the coffee urn is draining down the wall, and he's got a fork stuck under my chin here on my side, and he's pushing it, and he said, "Where's your mother?" Now, I can try to answer him, but no matter what I say, he's going to get mad, and he's going to take his anger out on me. Mm. And if I don't say anything, then he's going to get mad and push it because I'm not answering him. So I had to wince or do something mm-hmm. that let him know that I'm paying attention. But I was pretending I didn't know where she was, and I knew she was down the street with this other guy named Makepeace. And they were busy. But that was life. And so mm-hmm. So he eventually just stood up and threw the fork away and left. But, you know, that could have been it for me.
Yeah.
Right there.
That's... So the first, the burning thing was still when you were four or something at that country place?
Yeah, I was in that age somewhere, you know, in the first 4 years of my life. I think I was younger than four. But yeah, that, and then I noticed a few days later, because that earthquake, mm-hmm. and those steps were all out of whack, and everybody was all outside looking at it and wondering, you know, how closely they came to being swallowed up by the earth.
Gosh.
Strange.
So what? Well, I'll have to Google earthquake and. In the 1930s in Farmington, New Hampshire. That ought to be findable.
It's about 39 or so.
That's wild.
38, 36, 37, 38, 39. Somewhere in there was an earthquake.
So do you have... So your mother came and picked you up and brought you back. What's your next group of memories from there?
Oh, well... Those were bad days because she had to marry Jimmy because I think I'm 4 years older than Barbara, so
Right, I was just going to ask
so
that.
So Barbara was...
That must have been right around when she was a baby then.
Right, she was going to be born or was born, I had something like that. But I was. So when I went back, Jimmy said to me, if you can't keep your face clean, I'm going to clean it with a wire brush. And he meant the kind we used to clean our paintbrushes with. The long wire bristles. And I didn't know, because I didn't ever show much fear or even concern, because it just aggravated the situation. So I just heard him. And a couple days later, he said, come in here. So I went into the bathroom, and he scrubbed my face.
With a wire brush?
Mm-hmm. And it left all little cuts.
You know?
But I didn't say anything. And then my mother, eventually, we crossed paths, and she said, come here. And she looked at my face and wondering what happened.
Mm.
And she took a cloth and she tried to wipe off the blood, and it stung. Really, really hurt when she did that. And I think she didn't say anything either, because she had to know how that happened.
Right.
And he was just like that. He was a mean man. I remember having, I must have had a temperature, because I know he didn't want me. He didn't like me at all, because I wasn't his kid. Right. I was just baggage. And so it was the tail end, it was post-depression, but it was still lingering. And he'd go pick apples, and he'd come back with his lunchbox with some apples in it, and that was our supper. So I remember I think I had a fever, because I saw all these, I'd see all these oval or circular things rolling down a road and different speeds, and that would go on for, seemed like hours, and then I noticed that the room got smaller and smaller, the opposite wall was closing in on me, coming close to me, and I didn't know whether it was just going to push me out of the building or what. It was that kind of stuff. So it was nightmares and fever and stuff. So those were going on, but he was death against doctors. You know, my mother was afraid of doctors, so there were never any doctors involved with anything. I remember when I was in a crib really early, I mean, I remember the story because they told me this. I don't remember the actual event. But I was in like a bassinet thing. I was a young baby, not very old, and I had pneumonia. And my uncle came by. It was winter in New Hampshire. He just happened to come by. He would come by a lot. I never knew when he was going to show up. And he said, this kid's got a fever. You should take this kid to a doctor. And they said no. So he took me.
Is that Uncle Ernie?
Uncle Ernie, wow. Yeah. So he took me. And see, pneumonia in those days would kill you.
Yeah. And it's dangerous now, but
yeah,
got medicine and doctors. But
they're
afraid of doctors and or like didn't want to pay for a doctor?
He didn't want to pay for anything. Jimmy didn't want to pay for anything. I was just a cost to him. And my mother was afraid. She'd had an accident in a car when she was younger. And she'd hurt her wrist or broken it or something. And she was deathly afraid of doctors. They took her to a doctor or something. And she just never wanted to go back. So hers was fear, but his was disdain. He didn't like me.
Great combination. So that... at some point, you moved to Derry and were at that place with no door and all of that. How old were you then? Was that like high school? Or?
We can't. See, they were itinerant. They were always in trouble with the local police.
Mm-hmm.
He was. And they went from town to town. I went to different schools 3 or 4 times a year at least. And... they went from like Haverhill to Derry to Manchester to Farmington to all those different towns. And so I remember being in Farmington, but I remember being in Haverhill. I remember coming back to school, back when I was in school, but I remember living in a little house on the bottom of Valley Street in Derry. was called Sleepy Hollow. And I remember walking my sister to school. Walked my sister to school in Manchester. We're Wilson Street School in Manchester. But in Derry, we were in that little house that had a porch. No central heat. The only heat was from if you had a stove, or there was a kitchen stove, but you'd have to put wood in it. We didn't have the wood. But there was a little two or three burner stove that ran on kerosene. And you could cook with that or heat stuff up with it. Mm. But if it's middle of winter outside, it's middle of the winter inside too. Mm. And they would typically, they're shoe workers. They worked in shoe shops. So any town that was doing shoes, they could get, my mother could get a job because she was a fancy stitcher. She could do fancy stitching shoes, which not everybody did. And my stepfather could, he worked on the lasts and where they shape the shoes and put the soles on, that kind of stuff. He worked in the shoe shop.
Like the factories or whatever.
Yeah, shoe factory.
Is that part of why they, moved around because of getting in trouble, but is that part of why they moved around too, to job to job to job? Or?
Right, because they had to work to get along, but, they'd get paid, he'd get paid on Friday, and then he wouldn't be home till Saturday morning, 3-4 o'clock in the morning. And there was a lot of that, but, so they left me that time. One time they left me in the house, and Barbara was alive, and Barbara was on the scene. But he told me, don't light this stove. I said, okay, and I got cold, and I tried to bundle up on the bed as much as I could, and I was freezing. I got up, and I lit one of the burners. And it soon warmed me where I was standing. But the wicks, these circular wicks around these burners, were temperamental, and you had to keep moving, adjusting them so that they wouldn't cause carbon burn bluish and orangey, but not carbon.
Right.
So I finally got warm. It must have been like 2 a.m. or so, and I got tired. So I went back into the bed to lie down, and I woke up to a guy beating the crap out of me. Mm. And it was pitch black in the house, and there was carbon everywhere. It was in all the cupboards, it was between the plates, it was in the silverware, in the drawers, everywhere in the house. It was all over all the furniture, all the walls, all the ceilings, all the floors. And I had been breathing it in for I don't know how long. And he's pounding on me and kicking me. I was in the kitchen floor. I got on the kitchen floor. Did you light this burner? No. Mm. Again.
Well, that's sheer survival.
I know, but it's lying.
Yeah, but it's like lie or die, basically. He's going to kill you.
But I know, but you can't. My problem is, if I'm going to lie, I'm going to end up like my father in jail. Or if I'm going to lie, I'm going to end up being a product of my stepfather. And then when you came along, I didn't want you to be a liar either, because I had ditched it. Mm. I ditched it when I left home. I decided a new life. I'm not going to swear. I'm not going to lie. I'm not going to be who I've been all these years to survive. I'm going to be honest and truthful and take the responsibilities and take the consequences for whatever they were. And then when you came along and the lying thing happened, because that's normal.
Yeah,
kids normally do that. Yeah. But I didn't want you either to grow up in the influence of the DNA that you had, that you carried, in a diluted form maybe, but as DNA nonetheless. And you could have been the same sociopath that my father was, or the same adjusting your life with lies and dodging consequences that grow you. And so that's why I made that. You can't lie, you can't lie, you can't lie, you can't lie. consequences of that are going to come now so that you can't lie. And then you had the consequences of not lying all those years. You know, what are you going to do? You can't lie to Michael to detain him for the surprise party and all that. So, so the lying, all that, the continuum of it is clear to me now. It wasn't clear to me then. And while I'm on it, it seems to me that the reason God had me raised for all those years with that mad, that angry Jimmy Lawton was he wanted to teach me to be obedient. That I might not have been obedient. I might have been a rebel. I might have been a menace to society. Because most of all my relatives were jailbirds.
And you were, I mean, you were a rebel. You had rebellious times and things like that. But
well, I could have been a rebel. I could have used whatever giftedness he'd given me to do my own thing, which wouldn't have been good.
Right.
Especially if I drank. So, because all the bad stuff followed the drinking, but I just saw in the scripture how Jesus learned obedience from what he suffered. Right in the scripture. I mean, the Son of God. So I can see now why that happened to me, that I had to be born with this DNA and then raised in this RNA so that I would be able to be used of God at some point in my life without just denying God and being a rebel the rest of my life. So anyway, but that rabbit trail there, but it's recent to me that I got the clarity on it and I wanted you to know it because otherwise you may never know it. You know, it's a huge, very salient piece of knowledge that I never knew back then, never knew it till 2 days ago. You wonder, you ask questions like, a lot of people said, oh, poor you lived like this, and I went through all that baloney, and I go, well, yeah, but it just seemed normal to me then. Well, now I'm saying I can see the reason for it. That the end result, if you look at, they look through 77-year-old eyes at the 3 and 4-year-old stuff, and then you're looking through the eyes of the scripture, you can see how that happened for a reason. So, anyway, that's why you go into counseling instead of jail. And that's why you help lives instead of steal.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so just the whole turnaround.
Yeah.
So, I don't know where I was, but I remember in the early days when I was small, we lived down in that little house. And he came in and beat the tar out of me. My mother's screaming at him, "You're going to kill him! You're going to kill him!" And she's screaming at him. And finally, he kicked me and he said, "Get out of here!" And I went upstairs. When he first started doing it, I ran terrified out the back door and down the driveway, and he caught up with me, and he picked me up and dragged me back. It was a recurrence of the New York thing.
Yeah.
Run! So he took and he kicked me. There was a little like a little mud closet entry. Come in off the driveway. And it's like a, I don't know, 4x4 entryway, and then the door to the kitchen, and the big black stove that if you had wood you could put in it and heat the place, that the edge of that stuck out into the kitchen, and he kicked me as I approached the stove area, and he was in the mudroom area, and I went over the stove and landed on the kitchen floor. I was thinking, whoa, because and it didn't hurt, you know. Things didn't really hurt. It was like I was steeled to it. Mm-hmm. I was scared.
Yeah.
But I remember one time he's pounding on my back and I'm sitting on the floor, hunched over. My head is, I didn't want him to knock my head off, but I'm hunched over and he's punching and kicking my back and it didn't hurt. And I remember thinking, I wonder why this doesn't hurt. I mean, you'd think this would really hurt.
Yeah, I'm sure it did, but there's some but other preservation.
So then when he got through all that, and I went upstairs, I went upstairs, and I had a little cot upstairs that I slept on, and it was freezing cold in there. And I still, but by now, about all the adrenaline and stuff, I wasn't cold at all. But that's just a day in the life of what it was with that guy. And the next day, when life came to light, the house was ruined. And he took all the dishes out of the kitchen and threw, he opened the window, it was a kitchen window to the backyard. He threw all the dishes out, broke them all.
Threw them, clean them or anything?
No, threw them all in the backyard. And we had a, there was a little, like a little kid's cart with a handle. And he had me haul all those back to, we had our own dump back there in the woods. I had to haul all that stuff back into the dump. And
so he may have been, that's kind of more of a way to punish you or something.
Well, yeah, but he would have had me do that if somebody else did it. His favorite thing was to tell me to go rake the dump back. He couldn't. It had chicken wire. A giant couldn't have moved that stuff, but he'd have me go out there, and I was glad to be out there.
Yeah.
Just go out. So with that, but in that same year time, that same period of time, I don't think there was, Barbara wasn't there yet, but my mother sent me to get some cigarettes. She always sent me to get cigarettes, and she'd put a note in my pocket, and I had these rubber boots and a pair of socks, but the bottoms of them had holes in them so that when my foot moved, it clicked.
Mm-hmm. Like sticking to the bottom.
Yeah. Every step I took. And she'd put these mittens on me, and they were tied to my sleeves. So I had pants, boots, a coat, and a hat. I think it was a hood or something. She had some kind of a hood over my head, and she tightened it. And I had to go. It was quite a ways to the store. Quite a ways. It was like, for me as a little kid, it probably took me, I don't know, 35, 40 minutes to get to the store. And it was later in the day, you know. So I headed to the store, and there were snow plows coming by.
You want a water or something?
Probably, yeah.
Do you have one going?
There's probably one in the refrigerator door. It's a lot of talking for somebody that's living in a trailer.
So that 30 or 40 minutes of walking, even as a kid, that's got to be a couple of miles.
It was a long ways.
What, each way.
And it was...
at least one way.
There were big big trucks, big snowplow trucks that occasionally went by me, and there wasn't anybody out there. It was a flurry of snow. And the bankings were tall. You could barely see the houses. I couldn't see the houses behind the bankings. And I walked along and just trudging and trudging and trudging. And my feet were cold. My hands were cold. I tried to pull the fingers back into a ball in the mittens so that because they were freezing. And the more I walked, the hood turned so I could only see out of one eye. And the other eye had the hood over it. So when I got to and at some point, I heard a dog start barking, and it was barking closer and closer to me. And it got to the big snowbank, and I was on the street side, and it was on the other side. And I finally heard the owner call it back, because it was going to come over the thing. And he could have eaten me, I don't know. That was scary. So I finally got... I walked through all that stuff. I got to the store, and I told the guy, my mother needs a package of cigarettes. And I gave him the note and the money. And it was like walking into an oven. It was like 400 degrees in there, you know. And he said, man, what are you doing out on a day like this? I just got to get these cigarettes from my mother. And he wrenched my coat, and I could see out of both eyes. It was so cool. So he gave me this stuff, and I put it in my pocket. And he said, you better get home. It's getting dark. It's going to get dark. Mm. I said, yeah. So I turned around and started trekking back home. And it was really cold outside now after coming out of that place. But by the time I got all the way back home, I was really freezing. My nose was running, and my fingers were frozen, and my feet were killing me. And I got down the street. I got to where I turned left and went down my street and walked up in my driveway and got to the back door. And I couldn't turn the knob with the mittens on, my hand in a club. Mm-hmm. So I took the mitten off. And the other mitten off, I just had two hands to turn it. And when I went inside, it was just as cold in there as it was out here.
Oh, gosh.
And there was nobody home. And it was dark. There's no lights on. There's no heat. There's nobody. And I put my mittens back on my hands. And I went back outside. And it was like a reflex. I was trying to find out, well, did I miss something? They're not home, really? What? And the sun was down now, and it was starting to get dark, really dark. And night was coming, and the street lamp was on at the end of my street, where I'd come from. The light was on now. Mm-hmm. And so I walked out back down the driveway, took a left on the street, and headed toward that one street light. And I walked by Cody's house. Didn't seem to be anybody there either. And all of a sudden it occurs to me that I'm all alone.
Again.
Yeah. All alone again. And I didn't know where anybody was or if they were ever coming back or what am I, I'm freezing. What am I going to do? And I went to the snowbank and I just leaned over into it and shut my eyes. And I stayed under the light and I don't remember what happened. I don't remember what happened after that.
Jeez.
I mean, somebody must have come home, and I don't know what happened, but it's just a memory I have. Mr. Galleon lived up the street from that light, and he used to babysit for us once in a while. He's an old guy. He used to brag about his teeth were so good, and he'd eat the nuts that you got to peel the shell off when you eat the inside. Mm-hmm. You know that one? And then he'd eat the shells.
Ouch.
He'd crunch the shells up to demonstrate to us how great his teeth were.
Like a circus trick.
Mr. Galleon. And he had a son named Leo Galleon who rescued us one time. Very scary night. Very scary story. We were trying to escape from Jimmy. And we had...
You and Aunt Barbara?
Barbara and I... And my mother, and she had made arrangements with Leo to take us to Beverly, Massachusetts, or someplace. We were going to go down to Massachusetts and get away from him.
Oh, wow.
We were going to leave him.
Yeah.
And it was dark. And he wasn't home yet from work, which means that he's been drinking. And so we had this big box in the center of the room full of our stuff that we're going to put in the trunk of this car. And all of a sudden I heard the crunching of footsteps, single footsteps coming up the driveway. And I thought, we're dead. He's going to kill us all. All of us were just, oh my God. Because, you know, the evidence is there. We're looking like we're leaving.
Mm.
And it was Leo from... Leo Galleon from up the street. And we hustled all that stuff down to that car and jumped in it. She was in the front seat with him and we were in the back seat and the stuff was in the trunk and we got out of there and we drove to Massachusetts. But see, we were always coming back and we came back later. But Leo played the guitar. Mm. And I could see how his fingers were playing the guitar. And so he let me play. I could play it like one string and then move it up and play another string, and would change the chord from like a D to an A or something. Mm-hmm. I don't know. So you could actually sing a song to it. So I played one.
So you know like the names, you just like, your fingers are clustered like this for one sound and your fingers are clustered.
Yeah, but
like
I only used one finger on the bottom string, a couple frets in, 2-3 frets in, mm-hmm. and then the string right up above it. I mean, they were the high strings, the bass ones are on the top. But, and if it would change the key. It would change the key so I could sing a song with it. Mm. And that's how it started, you know.
Wow.
It was hearing those sounds and finding them on the guitar. And then I couldn't stop. The instrument was just nagging me to make this. And my ears wanted some sounds. And that's how that began with the guitar.
That has to be an escape.
Yeah. Wonderful. That later, when I went to live with the Cornelissons, I bought Pete LaFerrière's guitar for $1 a week for 26 weeks. It was a Sears guitar. And I learned to play that baby.
That was in high school?
That was in high school. Yeah, that's back when I was 16, probably.
Wow.
But see how the seeds are and the origins of it all?
Yeah, yeah.
It's just so crazy. I used to hear the guy next door, Alice Mae Taylor's father, would show up every once in a while next door to our house. And he would play the guitar on the back porch, which is like the front porch, I mean. And I'd hear those chords going, and I'd look out the window and see him playing that guitar, and I just wanted to play a guitar so bad. In those days, that was so cool. But the early years, I don't know, there are all kinds of stories, but, you know, I'm mixing up the time sort of.
Yeah, and I know, and this is good, it's been almost an hour, that's a good little start here, but I know over the years I've heard bits and pieces of them, but I didn't have any kind of timeline in my head, but it's just now occurring to me that, you know, kids of that age don't really have a lot of memories that come all the way forward to when they're older, and I would think that the ones that they do have a lot to do with the structure in their life, like memories with your siblings or the house where you lived or your family and those kind of things to kind of tie it together in a timeline. Like mm-hmm. Annie Bond has this ridiculously good memory because it's mm-hmm. so structured, mm-hmm. whereas you had no structure whatsoever and oftentimes nothing to anchor it, even like who's home.
No.
Or what house you're living in. So that's probably why they're all just vague and just out there, like, you know, hard to attach a timeline to them. And I'm thinking when you're doing that cigarette run, you're old enough to do that, so Barbara had to be alive. So where's she? Did you take her with?
I was pretty young. I was pretty young.
You think that was below 4?
Well, yeah, pretty young. I think we had only come back to that Sleepy Hollow from Farmington back in those days. I don't know. It was quite, as I remember it, I was a little person. And, but I had I had been given a lot of responsibility, you know, to survive on my own.
Yeah.
Like we didn't have food like people have food. There might have been a few potatoes or couple onions or something like that, but there weren't groceries. And if I were hungry, I'd calculatingly steal a potato and eat it like an apple.
And, a raw potato?
Yep. Yep. And that was sustenance. I had a cast iron stomach. If I had a cold, I'd eat a raw onion, and I wouldn't have the cold anymore. I couldn't do that now. I couldn't do that. I couldn't do that. After I lived with the Cornelissons, my stomach turned into a wimp.
Yeah, I mean, once you start getting actual, like,
vegetables and nutrients, and your, I would imagine what happens before that is your stomach just gets like a callus, so to speak.
Right.
And then you start actually feeding it nutrients and the lining of your stomach and your lower intestines start going, oh, we can actually absorb this. Then,
yeah.
Then they're like, freak out. Gosh.
Just wow.
That's too funny.
We were always, in those early years, it was the sine curve of coming home or leaving, escaping or returning forever. And so we would go, if she left him, he'd come after me, and I was upstairs, and I'd run to the window and jump down onto the porch and jump down onto the ground, winter, summer, didn't matter when, in my underwear, and run up the street to follow her with jockey shorts on, you know, and freezing.
Yeah.
But we'd duck into some neighbor's place and try to find some clothes and walk or bum to Farmington or some other area where she knew somebody, and never knew where those adventures went. They were scary, and they were survival stuff.
And I don't imagine, especially because she died so young, but also because it was such a hideous time, I don't imagine you had a lot of conversations like reliving that. Like, you know, like we might go on a trip, you know, like the sabbatical trip that we went on as kids. So many, many times in the years that followed that, we would recall those stories. Remember when we did this? And I think that helps to kind of crystallize your memory of everything.
Sure.
Whereas you didn't have that either, I wouldn't imagine.
No.
You wouldn't go, hey, remember that time you ran and I jumped out the window and we went to, you probably wouldn't have that conversation.
No. No phones, no radios. We had no radios. We had no telephone. And there was no music. My mother would hum stuff in those songs. To this day, if I hear one, or I start whistling one out of nowhere, boy, they grab my emotions bad. Bad. They take me down like a wrestling match lost. I can't do much of anything.
Like, how do you mean that?
I don't know. The music is...
Like, what I first started thinking when you're saying that is, like, back then, anything that would be nurturing or soothing or comforting is few and far between. So if that was nurturing or soothing or comforting, hearing her sing a song... or music coming from your mother, that might be good.
Well, yeah,
does that take you
true.
Back to a good place, or
that's
that take
true.
You back to like
no,
a horrible
because
place?
Because she wouldn't be whistling, she wouldn't be singing unless she weren't afraid. She wouldn't be singing unless she was happy.
Right.
I mean, relatively happy. She might be thinking
that's about, what I was going, like, to, if you hear that music now, does that take you to a good memory of her?
Oh, or? Yeah. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, yeah.
I get so emotional over it.
Mm.
And that's, you know, If I Loved You was back in Carousel when that was written. It's back in Gordon McRae, and some of these other showboat Broadway things. And some of those are in my head.
Mm.
And I just, but they're not just songs, they're containers of emotions.
Yeah, I would think they would have to be, because you're, again, comfort, especially like coming from your mother, was so few and far between that it was like a overdose oasis of comfort. So it had to tag in your psyche really strongly, because it was not often.
And some of it was pretty sad. Like, she used to sing things like, I'll get by as long as I have you.
Mm-hmm.
I'll get by as long as I have you. And I'm thinking, who's the you? This guy that pull your teeth out with pliers, burn your arm on the stove to the bone, sent you to the nut house. I mean, beat you up over and over.
At the time you were thinking that, or what you
would? Well, no, but no. I think this now.
Yeah, yeah.
But back then, he was a dad to me. You know, he'd beat the crap out of me all the time, but he was a dad to me. And I would obey him. And he was a father. I'd had to call him father. I couldn't call him. I changed my name in the fourth grade. I had to change my name. Because my name was Terrio, and his was Lawton.
Yeah.
And it was a reminder every time anybody came into the house. Drunks and stuff would come to the house, and so they started calling me Little Jimmy, which didn't help much, but still it was better than somebody else's son here. So there were some bad times, and there ought to be a segment just for that, I guess, because that's tough to listen to, and it's tough to go through. Some of these bad times are terrible, both with my mother and with him, with Jimmy.